From WXXI News, this is Unleash the Pet Show on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. I want to start this hour with kind of an honest statement about where we are with this program today and just kind of peel back the curtain a little bit because, well, we like our listeners to understand our thought process. And certainly after what happened yesterday in France with the terror attack in Nice, producer Megan Mack and I had a conversation last night. You have these moments where you say, you know, what can we do? What can we talk about? You know, what are the appropriate conversations and what are not? It is heartbreakingly awful to say that this is a conversation that has feels somewhat common lately. Whether it's Orlando or Turkey or elsewhere, we've had conversations about these attacks that just feel all too frequent recently. And it's not that we didn't feel like we couldn't add anything new, but we want to make sure that we handle things appropriately. We also want to make sure that the content of the program is appropriate. So a couple of points here. First of all, to the extent that there are any new developments out of Nice, that investigation, et cetera, we'll make sure that we have it for you. If NPR breaks in, if anything major happens, you're going to hear that. Second of all, you know, there's that part of us that thinks, well, we're talking about animals as we do on the third Friday of every month, and is that too light? But there are also moments where you need something a little lighter. You need a little bit of a diversion. Animals are like family to us. And later this hour, we're going to talk about how animals can help us after tragedies, psychologically, the impact that animals can have. We're going to meet somebody who went to Orlando after the events there. So our decision was to go ahead as planned with this conversation this hour. But we'll keep an eye on events there. We'll make sure you're informed. And we hope that you understand how we feel about that because we are sensitive to that and we want to make sure we bring you valuable programming. So with all that said, our animals are like family to us. And these are the days we need them more than ever. Their health is important. If you have any questions about your animal's health, it's a great chance for you to call the program this hour and get some answers. Dr. Katrina Tyrrell's here from Finger Lakes Animal Hospital. That's in Canandaigua. And you can ask a question by calling 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, you can call 263-WXXI, 263-9994. You can also tweet a question to the hashtag Unleashed or to our producer, Megan Mack, at mmackmedia on Twitter, mmackmedia. Dr. Tyrrell, it's great to have you here. Thank you for coming all the way in from Canandaigua. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you, Evan.
You've been at Canandaigua Animal Hospital for how long now?
For about 4 years or so.
It's Finger Lakes Animal Hospital. Yeah. It's in Canandaigua.
Yes.
I have to get it all straight here. About 4 years now.
Yes.
And how are things going?
Great. Great. We've got a great team behind us and a little shout out to them today.
Very good. And they're probably all listening right now, aren't they?
Probably.
Okay. Well, it is nice to see you here in studio. I also like to get a sense when our vets join us, what, you know, sort of your own animal background is. You have pets at home? Did you grow
yes,
up with
I
animals?
Do.
Yeah?
I did. I grew up with cats and dogs. And then when I started my veterinary education, I decided to branch off and did some large animal work, bovine and equine and a little bit of everything. And then situations change and family became more important. And so I decided to do something that would work best with my personal life. So I ended up in small and large, or cats and dogs. The occasional small furry rabbit, guinea pig, that sort of things, too.
So to be clear, Finger Lakes Animal Hospital is generally cats and dogs.
Generally cats and dogs. Although, if people want to haul them in, we will go see their, we will see their goats and their sheep and chickens and waterfowl and that sort of thing.
The horses?
No, unfortunately.
Do you ever get called to do horses, like horse on call?
On occasion, but unfortunately I can't really do, I'm not set up for it anymore. So.
Because I know you're familiar with the Finger Lakes, and we've got friends down in Branchport at Hunt Country Vineyards. They've got horses there, and I'm always thinking, mm-hmm. you know, who is taking care of animals like that in the Finger Lakes? I'm sure there are some.
Yeah, there's multiple single practitioners out there doing horse work, ambulatory horse work, because it's difficult. Otherwise, you'd have to haul them places. And there's a local clinic in Penyan that does horse work. Shout out to Eastview Veterinary Clinic.
Yeah, we know Eastview. I pass them all the time. Yeah. Probably drive by them tonight after work as our one way down to see in-laws tonight. Well, what is the biggest difference between small animals, cats and dogs, as you focus on now, versus, as you said, bovine equine?
It's a little, there's a bit more of a difference as far as economics are concerned. Bovine are more of a production animal. And so you have to think about both welfare of the animal and the economics of the production piece, you know, as far as milk and milk production and beef production, that sort of thing. Horses, there's a bit of a crossover there because for some, their economics is certainly an issue if there are any kind of competition horses. Mm-hmm. But then they are companion animals too. So,
very good. Well, I'll jump right in with phone calls if we want. And then we've got plenty of questions that have already come in from listeners. But again, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. And Megan in the city of Rochester is first up. Go ahead, Megan.
Hi. I was wondering about changes in animals' bowels, but without changes in food or routine, really. But all of a sudden, my dog's not going to the bathroom in the evening anymore. So I was wondering if there's something we can do to make him feel better or if there's something that we should be paying attention to.
How old is your dog?
3 to 4.
3 to 4 years old. Okay. And what kind of dog is it?
Like a little poodle mixture of some sort.
Okay. Well, all kinds of things can change their bowel toileting habits. Generally speaking, is the stool quality normal? Or are we having some diarrhea?
No, it's very normal. It's just not happening at night anymore. And we'll even walk him later at night, you know, 10, 11 at night, which is significantly later than normal. And he won't go then either.
Okay. Have you changed your feeding pattern with him? So morning and
no.
evening, or it's twice daily, morning and evening?
Yep.
Hmm. And do you notice any discomfort, straining, anything like that?
No, not at all. I'm wondering if it's in our head because we're paying attention to this. I wonder if he's a little bit less active now. Like
okay.
When we play with him, he's very active. But on his own, he seems slightly lethargic, but we could just be reading into it.
Yeah. So sometimes, certainly activity level can stimulate or not the gut to move. But also changes in your daily patterns can also change the toileting bowel habits. Of our pets. Stress can certainly do it, but sometimes stress will be accompanied by diarrhea. But it also could be that piece that maybe you're just noticing it now. Does he go to the bathroom in the backyard where you watch him, or do you just let him out?
No, we walk.
You walk. So you would notice it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And then I may have asked you this already, but has there been any change to the actual diet that he's been eating?
No, he's been on the same food for
a
long time now.
Okay.
Almost a year.
Okay. So provided you're not having anything going on that is abnormal as far as diarrhea, straining, discomfort, gas, then this might just be a change in his routine, little change in his routine.
Okay.
But if anything should change, you should definitely call your veterinarian, go in and see them and have a discussion about it.
That sounds good. I just wanted to make sure if it was something. I've been pushing water and things like that, too, but just trying to make sure that he's comfortable. I didn't know if it was...
Yeah. Well, and they may be more lethargic right now because with the humid, hot weather, they're not going to be, you know, us humans are not really moving around a whole lot outside, so they may not be either. So.
Sure. All right, thank you.
Megan, good luck to you. Thanks very much for the phone call. If you've got a question about your pet's health, this is your chance to call in. Dr. Katrina Tyrrell is here from the Finger Lakes Animal Hospital in Canandaigua. You can call 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. And, doctor, this may be a good transition there. Her question on, you know, you talk about diets. I know nutrition for animals is sort of a big thing for you. And obviously it's a big thing for all vets.
Mm-hmm.
But in particular, we were talking before the hour began. Now, you can be as specific as you want, but let me ask you, do you think animal owners occasionally get bad advice on what their pets should be eating?
Yes, they do. I'm sorry. So nutrition's really important. And we like to stress right from that first puppy visit that we are very active in the food, like to be very active in the choices of food that they have picked for their pets. And we start talking about nutrition right away in the office from the first puppy visit. We want to know what they're eating, how much they're eating, whether they like it, what their stool quality looks like. And then we make changes if we need to accordingly. Or not. So we feel that there's a lot of myths out there about nutrition, but marketing is very strong. And so we like to separate the facts from the myths.
You want to pick one big myth you hear a lot?
Grain-free is a common one.
Is that a slogan that means nothing, or what is that?
Well, so there's lots of them, actually,
yeah,
Evan.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So things like holistic and all natural don't mean anything. They can write them on the bag, and it really doesn't mean anything at all.
Because legally, all natural doesn't have to mean anything anyway,
no,
right?
No, neither does holistic. So owners think, well, I'm feeding this all natural food. It must be great, but not necessarily. The other thing, so grains, people think, you know, corn and wheat and all and those sorts of things are bad and they're inflammatory and that sort of thing. Now, that's taken a lot from the human world. And you know, we're very close with our pets. They're another part of our family. So we want to take care of them just like we take care of our other human family members. So it's really not surprising to see pet owners anthropomorphizing about that. So what I would say about grain-free is that it's actually a myth. There's really nothing wrong with feeding your dog grain. If you're concerned about the allergy piece of with grain, you're talking less than 5% of pets have problems assimilating grain in their digestive tract. Corn is, in fact, a complete feed that's really, if processed appropriately, okay. So when we think of corn, we think of hulls. We think of corn on the cob. We think of it coming out the same way it went in, and that it's not perhaps very nutritious. But in fact, its macronutrients are quite balanced. So it has carbohydrate, it has protein, it has fat, it has minerals, all of which, if you get rid of the hull and you process it appropriately, it is quite nutritious. But people get very passionate about corn. And don't want it in their food and that sort of thing. But I'm here to tell you that it is okay when you're talking a very, very, very low percentage of pets that have a problem with corn, like less than 5%. Usually the problem is with protein.
All right, so this is very helpful because I think you're right. We have been trained to think of ourselves and our own diets to not fall victim to slogans, to understand what has actual legal meaning and what doesn't. Mm-hmm. But it's true for animals as well. So be cognizant of that. If you get advice in a pet store, no offense to pet stores, but maybe also talk to your vet about that. Fair?
Yes, fair enough. We really want to talk about it. Honestly, really talk to us.
And then when it comes to food, we're talking about what your animals are eating that's food for your animals. There's also the question of what's okay to give them in human foods. We'll get into that if we can. I want to get back to your phone calls. I'm late for a break, but one other quick question on what animals eat, dogs eat. People always ask about raw hides. What's never come up on this show. Raw hides, okay or not?
Raw hides are okay to a point. You have to be careful with the size of them. So in short, the large knuckle bones, the ones with the big knots, the braided ones are not okay. They can break teeth on them.
What if your dog's like 140 pounds and it's like a tank?
Still, if you can bang that knuckle bone off their knee and it hurts them, then you wouldn't want to feed it to them.
Even if you
That's the general rule.
If you've got like a lab tractor trailer mix of a dog, those raw hides can be trouble.
No knuckle bones.
Okay. No knuckle bones.
But rawhide, flat, thin raw hides are fine. And actually, many of them are very beneficial to their dental health. So I encourage the dental raw hides.
Why are they selling knuckle bones then if they're trouble?
Because people think that they're doing wonderful things for their pets and they're spoiling them by giving them a treat such as one of those bones. And it's really, I mean, they break teeth on them. Mm. They're more likely to get stuck, but they do tend to soften and pass through. But the other thing is you can get some really nasty digestive upsets with those too. So I can't tell you how many times clients come into me and they said, well, I bought him this treat and this lovely bone and now He's got diarrhea all over my house.
All right. So bottom line with raw hides, they can be okay. Knuckle bones, no good.
Yes.
Okay. Let's get our first break of the hour. We're going to come back with Dr. Katrina Tyrrell from Finger Lakes Animal Hospital in Canandaigua. And your phone calls for her are next on Unleash the Pet Show on Connections.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from the financial advisors of the Sartini Group at Morgan Stanley, 585-987-6053. Investments and services are offered through Morgan Stanley Smith Barney, LLC, member SIPC. From Natural Pet Foods Company, helping people make diet choices for their pets, offering frozen and grain-free foods and foods for pets with special needs, 766 Clinton Avenue in the South Wedge, naturalpetfoodscompany.com. And All Cats Care Center, a full-service feline veterinary hospital offering medical and surgical care and boarding. All Cats Care Center, where cats come first. More online at allcatscarecenter.com.
Welcome back to Connections on this Friday afternoon. And let me get back to your phone calls for Dr. Katrina Tyrrell from Finger Lakes Animal Hospital in Branchport, listening on Finger Lakes Public Radio WEOS. I assume this is Rudy next up. Go ahead, Rudy.
My name is Rudy White, and I'm in Branchport, New York. I have a 10-year-old black lab, and she's been diagnosed with a cancerous tumor between her bladder and rectum, and she's getting weak in the back legs, trying to go up steps, and we're trying to figure out what is the best thing to feed her, because she's really straining to go, and she's on Neurontin for, she has a lot of twitching, excuse me, in her hind end, and she's also on stool softener twice a day and a little prune juice with each meal, but sometimes she refuses to eat, and other times she does eat, and I'm just wondering what's the best way to go about feeding her.
Okay, doctor?
First of all, Rudy, I'm really sorry for the cancer diagnosis in your lab. That must be tough for you. So I'm assuming that you've worked with your veterinarian as far as having a treatment management plan in place for her. Yes? Okay. And is there pain management involved with that?
No, she's just getting the Neurontin and the stool softener.
Okay. So when she...
I didn't know about how much, if I could, you know, give her aspirin or...
Okay. Well, so when she postures to go to the bathroom, you said she's having a hard time in her back end. Does she seem weak or uncomfortable or both?
It's both. She squats down, strains real hard, and then passes a little, then moves on.
Okay.
And, leave a little trail.
Okay. And what's the stool quality look like? Is it real firm or is it real soft? Is it misshapen?
It's flat.
Okay.
And sometimes it's hard and sometimes it's soft, but it comes out flat.
Okay.
It's real swollen and near her anus.
Okay. So presumably the tumor is probably pressing on her rectum, and that's what's flattening the stool and making it difficult for her to go to the bathroom.
Right.
So first and foremost, I definitely think you should speak with your veterinarian regarding some pain control for her. Because if she's having trouble posturing because she's uncomfortable, that's going to make everything that much more difficult for her. Plus, no pet with cancer should be without the benefit of pain control. No pet with any painful condition in general should be without the benefit of pain control. We live in a time right now that is pretty progressive for pain control in dogs and cats and as well as other animals. So certainly some pain control for her is in order. The stool softener is definitely a good idea. You may need to up that dosage, and I encourage you to discuss that with your veterinarian. As far as diet is concerned, the prune juice is definitely fine. Speak with your veterinarian about a prescription diet that is high in fiber. Higher fiber diets will help with making the stool a little softer and easier for her to pass in conjunction with that stool softener that she's on. And then that's probably where I would start there. Does that answer your question, Rudy?
Yeah, I mean, and you know, in the mornings, she's still active, and we have a pug-a-poo, and they play together with toys, and so she's still herself other than what she's going through, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a great resource online that you may want to look up. It's the Quality of Life Scale. It's put out by Dr. Villalobos. She's a veterinarian that her specialty is end-of-life care and oncology. And when you put that, when you get that scale up, you can Google it. It helps you make something that's very subjective into something a little more objective as far as evaluating your pet's quality of life. And it goes through several different things, asks you questions, and has you rate them. So once their quality of life gets below a certain number, I believe the number is 30, then at which point that's considered a poor quality of life. That may help as far as evaluating whether or not some of the treatments and therapies that you're doing for your dog are actually helpful or not.
Well, good luck to you, Rudy, and thanks for calling the program. It's always tough to go through this as an owner, but hopefully that will help. Let me turn now to Arondaquite, and this is Chris next up. Go ahead, Chris.
I was giving you guys a call. So my girlfriend and I just picked up a new collie puppy as a new addition to our family last week, and I grew up with collies for most of my life, and the two male collies I grew up with had never been neutered and sort of lived long, healthy lives, being fully intact. And so now that it's sort of up to me with having a puppy of my own, I wanted to sort of get a little bit of input as far as the benefits and side effects of neutering. I know that I'd seen some articles that were sent to me from my parents that sort of gave a sort of contrasting opinion of pointing out some studies that had negative side effects as far as the like growth of the dog during the sort of like puppy stage into full into being full grown, as well as other sort of tendencies towards higher likelihoods of cancer, at least from a couple of different studies that have been done by veterinarians, I think over on the West Coast, as far as the effects of neutering. So I just wanted to sort of get some different opinions that I can consider when moving forward and making that decision.
Sure, absolutely. That's a great question. We get that question a lot. So when you say neutering, are you referring to males? Or are you referring to...
Referring to male.
Male. Yep. Okay. I'm going to direct my answer specifically speaking about the males, because the females are a little different story. Study you're talking about, yes, we're very familiar with it. It came out of UC Davis, and it was a study with golden retrievers specifically. And it looked at the rate of certain orthopedic diseases and certain specific types of cancer in dogs based on the age that they were spayed or neutered. So they looked at it to see if there was an increased incidence of those sorts of things. What's interesting is it did show that there seems to be a variation. They don't know what that is, but there seems to be a variation in cancer rates and rates of orthopedic disease. So I'm very familiar with that study. Having said that, though, it also depends on where you're coming from. So males, you don't have to worry about certain types of cancer in males that are not neutered. In fact, intact males have a lesser risk of developing prostate cancers than not intact males. Prostate cancer. Yes. Mm-hmm. So, had to think about that one for a minute. But the other thing is the rate of growth piece is sure, definitely important. If you wanted your pup to develop more male-like characteristics, then you're going to want him to not be neutered so early on and wait till, you know, he's a year to 18 months of age or so. Now, doing that, though, you may develop more male-like behaviors. So things that might not be very socially acceptable, like humping and urine marking and those sorts of things. Sometimes they're a little bit more excitable, but a lot of owners can work around that. And then if you're in an area where you've got intact females, and he may be coming into contact with other females, I mean, we're so overpopulated with pets in this country that it's important to prevent indiscriminate breeding. So that's kind of where where we come from, and where a lot of shelters come from, is that we just want to prevent it from happening because there's just so many unwanted animals. But I do understand where you're coming from with that particular dilemma.
Right.
Yeah, it's a very individual decision. Having said that, the majority of the dogs that I see that are hit by cars are actually intact males, believe it or not, because they get out of the house.
Wow, that's an interesting
observation. Yeah, an awful lot of them are. They get out of the house, they start running, and then they end up getting hit by cars. So, but again, very individual decision for you and your family, and congratulations on the addition.
Yeah, he's definitely a handful, but he's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Chris. Good luck to you. You'd say the majority of the dogs that get hit by cars, majority of the males you see.
This is just me, personally.
Yeah. I'm not saying this is a scientific study, but this is observationally.
Yeah, observationally, yeah, a lot of them are.
Yeah, that is.
Young males.
Well, I want to get back to a little bit of a discussion on nutrition, if we could.
Sure.
Because we covered sort of animal nutrition for your actual animals, pet food, animal food, not human food. We talked about raw hides. But you also said something that I thought was worth noting on the way we as people tend to look at our animals and assume that if it's good for us or bad for us, it would be equally good or bad for them. And that's not always the case. Here's an example. I know a family member who says, well, my dog eats everything. We try not to give him too much people food, but if it's vegetables, he loves it. He'll still eat it. Mm-hmm. Vegetables good for dogs? I mean, generally speaking, that's all right?
Yeah, vegetables are okay. It is okay. We have clients that like to give their pets baby carrots, green beans, those sorts of things, particularly as treats.
Okay. Generally speaking, that's okay. But there is a short list of people foods that are more toxic. I mean, what would be your list of, I don't know if there's a top three or five, don't feed?
Well, and a lot of people know this, but chocolate's at the top of the list.
Sure.
Fatty foods aren't necessarily toxic, but they can incite gastroenteritis and something called pancreatitis, where their pancreas flares up, and it's pretty nasty and painful condition. We sometimes call it garbage gut. So that's up there. It's funny, people will say, oh, apples are toxic because there's arsenic in the seeds. Well, they'd have to eat a ton of seeds in order for that to be toxic, and it'd be toxic to us too. So, and yet we still eat apples. So those are the big ones. Gum, chewing gum with xylitol in it. Xylitol is toxic. There's a lot of macadamia nuts, but they'd have to eat a lot of those.
Okay. Avocado?
Yeah, it's the pit.
Oh, interesting.
It's the pit. It's not the actual.
And I'm sitting there going, well, they'd never eat the pit. But then I think of, again, the labs in my life that eat everything.
Yeah.
I mean, my mother-in-law used to keep a list of things that Benny and her lab shepherd mix ate, and it always was incredible to me. Glass bottles and razor blades. And I'm going, what?
Yes.
But so a pit of an avocado. Mm-hmm. You've seen that?
I have not personally seen that. Honestly, it's mostly chocolate that we see. Onions. People love to give their dogs garlic too, because they think it keeps the fleas away and the mosquitoes. But garlic is part of the onion family, and it can cause something called a Heinz body anemia. And so you want to stay away from anything in the onion family.
I haven't seen this. It seems unlikely, but if they eat something like raw coffee beans, concerned about that, or yes or no?
The caffeine in the coffee beans would certainly cause a problem. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, similar to the caffeine that you would have in, say, the chocolate, can cause problems.
All right, some of our listeners have asked
bread dough.
Oh, bread dough.
Pizza dough. Yes, pizza dough is a big one because it rises, and then it elaborates alcohol. So you get this dog that comes in and he looks like he's drunk and he smells like yeast. So yes.
We have to sit down with the owners and have what have you been doing here?
Yes.
Some of our listeners have asked about a condition called bloat, or I guess it's gastric dilation volvulus.
Yes.
What is that, and what are the causes?
So it's we call it GDV for short, and it's a condition where the stomach fills up with gas first, and then it twists on itself. Sometimes it'll just fill up with gas, but then and not twist, and that's what you hope for when you get one of these. But oftentimes it twists on itself. It traps the gas in there, and so the stomach continues to distend and become congested, and then effectively the tissues start to die in the stomach of the wall. What you'll see in your pets is that they'll start to retch, unproductive vomiting, basically. Their abdomen will become distended. They'll seem very, very uncomfortable. It happens very quickly, very acutely. And I hope it's something that never happens to anyone's pet, because it's really kind of a horrible thing to see. It is definitely an emergency, so if you have any inkling that that's going on in your dog, you need to seek emergency care right away. Treatment options include decompressing the stomach. So what we would do first off is try to pass an orogastric tube down into the stomach and try to relieve the gas and some of the fluid that's building up in the stomach first, stabilize our patient, and then eventually they go to surgery to tack the stomach down. Now, the stomach tacking piece called a gastropexy will keep the stomach from twisting on itself, but it won't keep the stomach from being able to distend with gas again, which is certainly uncomfortable. For some, they opt to not go to surgery and just pass the tube and let the stomach deflate. And the likelihood that they'll twist again is pretty high. And then there's others that you can't pass the tube because the stomach's so twisted around, it just won't, the tube won't pass into the stomach, at which point you have to do a percutaneous, which is you put a needle through the skin into the stomach to try to decompress before you take them to stabilize them and try to take them to surgery.
Okay, and so before we move on from that subject, just a quick note to our listeners on how to recognize, you know, what's the main way to recognize if this is happening and is a problem for your pet?
Unproductive vomiting, unproductive or retching, distended abdomen, very painful. It's very dramatic. I don't think it's anything that pet owners will miss.
How often do you see it?
Thank God, not very often. Yeah. Not very often. I've had one in the past 3 years. So
we're talking to Dr. Katrina Tyrrell from Finger Lakes Animal Hospital that's in Canandaigua. Where are you in Canandaigua, by the way?
We are just off of 332 on the Thomas Road. Back there on the left-hand side.
Down in the near, closer to the lake, I guess. You know, well, down off 332, right?
Yes, at the
outside
of town.
I always come from the thruway, so Farmington, yeah. All the way down
north
the
end
lake. North end of town.
So, actually, behind the Farnsworth Chevy.
Okay, very good. So that's where you can find her. We're going to get our only other break of the hour, and we're going to come back And we're going to talk about the impact of animals, especially when we need some psychological healing. And you're going to be introduced to a golden retriever named Journey, who traveled to Orlando last month to comfort people affected by the Pulse nightclub shooting. That is next on Unleash the Pet Show. Coming up in our second hour, Mickey Rooney and Marlon Brando as Japanese men, Tom Cruise as the Last Samurai, Christian Bale as Moses. Why does Hollywood draft white actors to play non-white roles? And when it comes to the theater, why is it that so many non-white actors have a hard time finding work? How can that change in Western New York? We explore all of that next hour.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from Natural Pet Foods Company, helping people make diet choices for their pets, offering frozen and grain-free foods and foods for pets with special needs. 766 Clinton Avenue in the South Wedge, naturalpetfoodscompany.com. From All Cats Care Center, a full-service feline veterinary hospital offering medical and surgical care and boarding. All Cats Care Center, where cats come first. More online at allcatscarecenter.com. And the financial advisors of the Sartini Group at Morgan Stanley, 585-987-6053. Investments and services are offered through Morgan Stanley Smith Barney, LLC, member SIPC.
Welcome back to Unleash the Pet Show on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. The veterinarian and chief of staff at Finger Lakes Animal Hospital is Dr. Katrina Tyrrell, who has such a good bedside manner with people. I just can just sense the way you talk to people. So, you know, first of all, thank you for being here. Hope you're enjoying your first time on Unleashed.
Thanks for having me, Evan. It's been fun.
Well, good. And we're going to move into a discussion on therapy and psychological healing. And my guess is you have seen that power just in the people you've worked with, have you?
Absolutely. We see it every day. Every day.
Well, there was, of course, the nation's eyes on Orlando last month. And, you know, therapy dogs are working to comfort people in Dallas following the fatal shooting of 5 police officers. That's happening now. Whether it's golden retrievers or other breeds, one thing is clear. The presence of dogs does have a way of healing the human heart. And our own Beth Adams recently spoke to Ron Graff of Tampa, Florida. He and his golden retriever, Journey, went to Orlando last month to comfort people affected by the Pulse nightclub shooting.
Ron, welcome. It's so good to have you here.
Well, thank you for having me.
You and Journey did make the trip down to Orlando. You are in Tampa, Ron. Why did you want to go there?
Well, when I got the call on Sunday afternoon from Therapy Dogs International that they wanted to activate a team for Orlando, I said, absolutely. Given the scope of the tragedy and what we were hearing in the news reports, we just knew that we had to have a disaster stress relief team there to be able to provide that level of therapeutic and emotional support to family members and first responders and the community at large. And so I left Monday morning, drove over to Orlando, and Journey and I spent the day at the Bear Doll Center, which was a very tough and emotional day. That was the day that most family members were receiving notifications from officials about their loved ones having been killed at the club. And Journey just worked through the room, doing what we expected disaster stress relief dog to do, providing that level of therapeutic and emotional support.
You know, for people who have not witnessed that, describe that scene and what Journey does and how the people react.
Journey is got a very infectious personality, and certainly because of the prosthetic, he attracts a lot of attention, and it certainly allows for us to engage with people in a conversation. But just in a disaster setting, when we've got the stress relief dogs there, they're very attuned to people's emotions. And Journey would just go up to people and lean into them, and automatically people would start petting the dog and start talking to the dog. Sometimes Journey will roll over on his side and let people pet his belly. And it really just gives people that opportunity to spend a few minutes totally focused on the dog and unfocused on all the other things that are going on around them at the time. And that's part of what the whole disaster response is intended to do, is give people that opportunity just to de-stress and focus on the dog and be able to step away from what they're dealing with otherwise.
You said he's real good at picking up people's emotions. So in instances like this, where we've had people just with untold tragedy that they've been dealing with, you feel that he really knows what's going on? He knows that they're in pain?
You know, the dogs are very intuitive in that respect. Just to give you a sense of that, we were in the room and there was a woman sitting in the corner by herself in a chair. And Journey just walked up to her and put his head on her lap. And she spent, you know, 5, 6, 7 minutes just talking to him and to petting him. And she got up and she thanked Journey for his time and she thanked me for my time. And she went on to say that she had just been informed that her son was among the victims. And she appreciated the few minutes that she could spend with Journey.
That has to be very difficult, Ron, for you. How do you see your role in these situations?
My role is as the handler is really to get Journey there. We often joke with the pet therapy program that I'm just the driver and the guy who's there to push the elevator buttons. But largely the dogs do all the real work. My job is really just to make sure that they're safe and that they're, you know, we give them breaks and water them. But really, it's the dog who's doing all the work. Now, I will say for the disaster stress relief program, we are talking about a very specialized group and a very highly trained group of therapy dogs. dogs that have been tested extensively to ensure that they will respond appropriately to the stressors of a disaster situation. And as a handler, the handlers also are evaluated. Part of it is a psychological evaluation from a mental health professional to ensure that I, as a handler, can deal with the stressors that we'll find in a disaster situation. And also the handler is required to take several FEMA courses, including courses in psychological first aid.
So it sounds like you just let the dog, in this case Journey, take the lead and go to whoever he's moved to go to in that room.
Yeah, typically what we would do is just move through the room or the area, and the dogs will naturally just go up to people and will introduce the dog, see if people want to say hello and interact with the dog. Some people don't want to, either because they may be afraid of a large dog or because of allergies or just because they just simply don't want to engage with the dog at that point. But when we were at the Family Assistance Center for the week that our team was there, we often would engage with the same families and the same individuals several times as they were going through the process of making arrangements and getting the help that they needed from the Family Assistance Center.
What do you get out of this work, Ron, and what do you think Journey gets out of it?
I get the satisfaction, if that's the right word, of being able to share him with the community and knowing that in some small measure we're able to do some good and we're able to support people in what is often the most desperate time of need. Journey is a loving dog. He loves people, and he just loves to be able to interact with people. He'll walk up to people on the street when we're visiting in the hospital, and he just hangs out with people. And as I said earlier, the dogs, and it's pretty remarkable to see, they really almost act like a sponge. You can see as soon as somebody puts their hands on the dog, you can just see their demeanor change. You can see that stress being released, even if it's only for a few minutes. And the dogs, I think, appreciate the fact that they're able to do that for people.
It's an incredible bond and one that we're so grateful for. Ron Graff, thank you, and thanks to Journey for the great work that you do.
Oh, it's our pleasure, and thank you for your interest. And I just want to thank my team that was with me in Orlando. And also we want to be able to thank the City of Orlando, State of Florida, and the federal government for inviting us in and allowing us to be part of the response to the community.
That's Ron Graff talking to our Beth Adams about his work with his dog Journey and Therapy Dogs International. And so what about pet therapy in our area? Maybe you would love for your dog to become a therapy dog. Joining us now in studio is Kim Ferris Church, the Humane Education Manager at Lollipop Farm. Kim, welcome. How are you?
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you here. You've got a role in Lollipop Farm's pet therapy program. And my understanding, Kim, is if I've got a dog and I want it to be a therapy dog, there are a number of different avenues. Lollipop has one, yes?
Absolutely.
And what's the process like?
So we offer different behavior classes. So the first step would be to get your dog to go through the AKC Canine Good Citizen class. After that, they would take the pet-assisted therapy class and participate in our volunteer orientation. After that process, the dog actually just has a short little assessment with our behavior staff where they, you know, assess what they do around other dogs, what happens if we touch their tail or their ears, making sure that they're comfortable around different situations. And then they become certified to be a Lollipop therapy animal. So we do have dogs. We do also have a few cats and some guinea pigs and a rabbit.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Are there any breeds that are better sort of suited temperamentally to being therapy dogs than others? Or would that be a stereotype?
You know what? That's a really good question. When people ask me about breeds, you know, certainly there are traits that are specific towards breeds. But at the same point, every dog is different.
Yeah.
So I think it really just depends on the dog, on their experience level. The dog does need to be over the age of 2 to be able to go through these classes. We don't have puppies because, you know, we have to make sure that their behavior is a little bit modified.
Yeah.
So it really just depends. You know, if you feel that your dog is calm and relaxed and not jumpy, then definitely worth a shot.
I met a pit bull recently named Reef. Shout out to Reef, who probably listens every third Friday of the month in the first hour, to the extent that dogs can. Actually, he's probably sleeping or eating. But I thought this dog could be a therapy dog. This is the nicest, most truly loving dog I think I've ever met. It's a pit, this gorgeous brindle color. And have you had pits do the program?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I actually have two pit bulls at home. I love them. And, you know, they definitely are family dogs that are compassionate and, you know, the stereotype doesn't quite fit with my dogs, at least. And someday I hope my dog will become a therapy dog, but he is a little young still at this point.
Okay. Well, let me ask Dr. Katrina Terrell from Finger Lakes Animal Hospital, when it comes to breeds, do we over-stereotype? Is there one in particular that gives you the most grief as a doctor? And it's definitely a Chihuahua, isn't it?
Yes, definitely.
I'm mostly kidding. I'm just hoping Norma Holland is listening so she'll call in and yell at me for that.
Absolutely not. And in fact, the two times where I've been bit and actually had to be, broke the skin, went for antibiotics, were actually golden retrievers, believe it or not. Yeah. So there is no stereotype.
Or in other words, the stereotypes that we may have are probably unfair?
They are. They're definitely unfair because we see all kinds.
Do you have people who have asked you, hey, do you think my dog would make a good therapy dog? Has that come up? Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
And how would you answer that question usually?
Carefully.
Especially if you think the answer is no.
Oftentimes, though, when they come in asking about whether or not they want their dog would be appropriate for therapy dog, they're puppies at that point. So time will tell. But at that point, it's good to start the discussion about getting them into puppy socialization classes first, and then moving on to obedience classes and canine good citizen and putting them through their paces early on. To become a therapy dog.
Well, Kim, you know, is there a situation where you have to turn people away, not just for age, but for other reasons, or dogs that just are not suited to the program?
Yeah, we do have times where, you know, people are interested. And I think that going through the steps sort of weeds out animals that may not be as successful as other animals. But we, you know, we do still try to work with the animals and try to continue to do behavior classes with them so they can help grow and eventually age into that.
Sure. And all right. So if you miss this, let's hit it one more time here. Ideally, the process, if it goes really well, if I call Lollipop and I say, I'd love to enter the program for my dog, I think my dog would be a great therapy dog, start to finish can be how long? How quick?
I would say it would be a couple months worth of process because
That's pretty soon. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, we do want to have them. And, of course, this depends on the dog and their behavior or the animal for that matter. So if there's a dog that has had behavior classes in the past, maybe not necessarily with Lollipop but somewhere else, you know, we have the ability to help with that.
Okay. So it can be just a few months.
Yeah.
And if it takes a little longer.
That's okay.
That's okay.
Yeah.
And once you get that certification, your dog can go where? What do you see your graduates, for lack of a better term? What do you see them doing?
So we actually, we set up visits throughout the Greater Rochester community. So we oftentimes go to a lot of assisted living homes or retirement homes. But we do also, my favorite is when we go to colleges during exam times, and we'll set up in the like student union hall, and the college students just like melt as soon as they walk in. They're so excited because they miss their pet from home, and it really is a stress reliever. Another really exciting thing that we're working on bringing back is our READ program. So we're taking our therapy dogs, and we are right now we're partnering with the YMCA of Greater Rochester, and we're hoping to hopefully partner with some other youth organizations in the future. But essentially, we bring our therapy dogs to where children are, and then the kids can read to the animal, which is very exciting as well.
I remember we covered that on this program and just thinking how cool that was.
Right?
Did I hear your voice on that program?
Yes.
I did, so it's
so
good to put a face with it.
That was when we talked about Book Buddies, which is another program we offer where you can read to the cats that are waiting to be adopted. So we have two literacy programs right now that we're really excited about.
Very good. Well, you've probably seen some really, really touching stuff when it comes to therapy animals, therapy dogs. And now, listeners, if you think your dog would be good for it and you think that's something you want to do, Kim Ferris Church or Lollipop Farm, the easiest way to get in touch with Lollipop, what should they do?
I would say visit our website, which is lollipop.org. There is a drop-down window there that has information on pet-assisted therapy and our behavior classes. But you could also pick up the phone and give us a call, and we're open 7 days a week.
Also want to mention that this coming Sunday at the Little Theater, there's two programs with different dog-themed films. It's a dog film festival, and you can bring your dog to the Little Theater. 11 o'clock and 1:30. Those are the two different programs with dog-themed films that you can bring your dog to, 11 and 1:30, this Sunday at the Little Theater. Tickets are $15 for adults, $10 for kids, and half of the net proceeds will go to Lollipop Farm. So enjoy, have fun with your dog at the Little. I know Kim and the staff appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much.
And you know, I don't say this with any insincerity at all. Thank you for the work that you and the dogs and your graduates do in our community. We looked at Orlando, the piece Beth brought to us. You know, we really need our animal friends and companions, especially in weeks like we've been having. So thanks to Kim. If you want to get out to, well, if you are looking for a veterinarian, if you've got a new animal, I don't know if you've got any space for new guests over there down in Canandaigua at Finger Lakes Animal Hospital. Where can they find you?
They can find us on Thomas Road in Canandaigua behind the Farnsworth Chevy. We always are happy to welcome new clients and new patients through our door.
Are you online as well?
We are online at www.fingerlakesanimalhospital.com and on Facebook as well.
Come back sometime.
I will.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. It's been really enjoyable.
Dr. Katrina Tyrrell from Finger Lakes Animal Hospital. And our thanks to you as well for all the different questions that came in about your animals this hour. You can let us know what you think about Unleashed by tweeting us at #Unleashed. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/UnleashedPetShow. Thanks very much for listening this hour. Short break and more connections next.